Everybody, good evening. I'd like to call the Wednesday, November 13th, 2019, meeting of the Oceano Community Services District to order. May we have a roll call, please?
Director Gibson?
Here.
Director Villa?
Here.
Director Plogle?
Here.
Vice President White?
Here.
President Austin?
Here. Okay, will you all join me in the flag, please? Agenda review. Did you have something on the, some additions to our...
President Austin, members of the board, we have modified our agenda item 8B. We have provided a modified staff report with the added warrants to FAMCO for parts for and materials for the drainage project, and then to Rabobank for our credit card for two training courses for our employees, a hotel for one of the training courses that was out of town, and an oven for the module back here for fire personnel that we had to replace. So the adjustment will increase the total cash disbursements from $377,511.44 to $380,295.83. At the appropriate time, the recommendation would be approval of staff recommendations in 8B as modified.
Okay. Okay, so we'll get a motion to approve the agenda.
I so move.
Modified.
Approve the agenda as modified.
Second.
May we have a roll call, please?
Director Gibson?
Here.
Director Villa?
Here.
Director Plogle?
Yes.
Vice President White?
Here.
President
yes.
Austin. Oh, yes. Sorry.
Here, yes. Yes, okay. All right. Closed session, there is none. What? So that brings us to public comment for matters that are not on the agenda. Is there anyone from the public here to speak on anything that's not on the agenda tonight? Hello.
Hello, President Austin.
Hello, everyone. I'm Barbara Harmon, and I'm representing Friends of Five Cities Fire Authority. We're a nonprofit organization dedicated to raising funds through grants and donations to support and promote fire services for Aurora Grande, Grover Beach, and the Oceano community. I'm here tonight to talk about a very important subject. It's called emergency preparedness. And I have one question for all of you. Is your family or are your loved ones prepared for fire, earthquake, or power outages? If not, with the exclusion and exception of Vice President White, of course. So if not, I'm here to tell you to Get Ready Five Cities. Get Ready Five Cities is our educational campaign in collaboration with the Five Cities Fire Authority, as well as through a grant funded through PG&E to share with our service area communities, Rio Grande Oceano and Grover Beach, some information about what to do, what to think about to prepare for an emergency, what items to take, to list, and how your family can develop your plan. So, tonight, I also have what I'm calling Get Ready Cards. And what these cards are, as you can see, Get Ready Cards. And when you open them, basically, it's a how-to and map and guide. The first page tells you how to get ready, lists all kinds of items that are important for you to consider to put in your go bag or keep in your kit should you lose power, etc. And then the part I like the best is the back. Vehicle insurance company information, insurance policy numbers, medication, important numbers, what your plan is, who your contact people are, where's your route going to be if your family isn't together, should there be an emergency when everybody is, you know, out and about and not all under one roof. And then the best part is it just folds up to the size of a wallet. You can keep it in your wallet. It's a credit card size wallet, purse, perhaps your child's backpack. And I have, with permission from the president, I have some to hand out to the board members today and the community members that are here tonight. And then if there are any local community organizations here that would like Friends of Five Cities Fire Authority to come and present or at least get you these cards for your family or your community service, then give us a call, 805-489-6389. Our website is friendsoffivecitiesfire.org, and that's the number 5. Or you can email us at friendsoffcfa@gmail.com. Thank you for your time.
Thank you very much, Barbara. I think you're going to hand those out.
Yes, if that's okay.
I have a question.
Yes, ma'am.
Is that just in English or is that also in Spanish?
No, these were only printed in English just based on the resources that we had and what we could afford to do them in English.
Thank you.
But thank you for that note.
Yeah.
I'll be right back.
Thank you very
much. Thank you very much.
We'll see you Monday at the Kiwanis.
And yes, you will.
Yeah. Okay. Any other public comment? Okay. Seeing none, we will move on to our special presentations and reports. Tony's not. Oh, yeah. I can't see you. Everybody's hiding behind them.
Good evening, Board. Tony Maricino. So I'm going to cover the last month. We had our regular samples, daily, weekly, monthly, our 17 work orders, 22 USAs, 16 customer service calls. We had 7 after-hours call-outs. 2 of them were for hydrants. 1 of them was on Pike Lane. That's already been repaired. We had a second hydrant on Railroad by Povey get taken out, and we got some estimates on that, and we're still pursuing the insurance claim on that. We had a South Elm house that needed the water shut off due to a leak, and the house valve didn't work. Also on 20th Court, we had another house that the house valve didn't work, and they had a leak internally that we shut off. There was road plates that were on Highway 1 that they were pinned into Highway 1. Basically, what I pin is a bolt to hold the road plates in place. As the traffic was driving over them, they were coming out, sticking up about 4 inches. The community called our on-call service. I was actually the on-call operator. Got a hold of Highway Patrol because there was no after-hours call-outs that I could get a hold of the gas company or Caltrans that I could find. So that was taken care of by them. We had other call-out for some unlocks because we had lock-offs. The Rock and Roll Diner had a severe leak at the backflow, and we had to shut it off so they can get it repaired. That was the 7 call-outs. We're continuing to do meter change-outs. We had a 20-yard roll-off placed at the end of the airport off of Delta and got all the trash and debris out of there, loaded into the roll-off. Well 8 is operating great. As for the Well 8 generator, the pad is tentatively going to be poured on Friday at 10 a.m. Everything looks good from the inspector. I met with her today, so that's going as planned right now. We're really focusing on sewer cleaning the past month or so. And since we've taken over the fog program, the fats, oils, and grease with the restaurants, a lot less grease we're seeing in the collection system as they're cleaning. So we're doing the internal fog program, which is really helping us out overall. We had to replace a few fire lane signs in the alleyways, lateral hot spots at the homes that we do probably every other month or every month. Well, I attended the drought prevention class. Myself and Casey did. It was free. As for Well 4, it got scrubbed, cleaned, and videoed. Now, Well 4 is supposed to be 200 feet deep. Currently, it's 150 feet deep, so we're looking into that to get it see what it takes to get it pumped out and then re-camera'd. If we did that and the casing's no good, we'd reline it. And trying to figure out how many gallons per minute, there's a lot of little options in there. Talk with the Regional Water Control Board what the options would be if we did lose well 4, since we do operate 4 and 6 together. So there's a little bit more legwork to be done on that to give you a better understanding of what we're going to be looking to do. All right. We had a lift station motor go down. Due to being clogged, we had to pull it and get it cleaned. The drainage project, the 12-inch water main going through Highway 1 is back in service. So that got lowered, and it's holding water right now and all good. They still got a few other locations that they have to raise or lower our water lines. Quite a few fire flow testing. The 311 trash, I'll give you an update on that, how many tickets we had. I had Casey and Doug do a sample class down in Bakersfield to get them up to speed on any new requirements for sampling. And we did dead-end flushing for the pad for a six-month dead-end flushing program.
What?
Dead-end flushing, we have about 23 water mains that dead-end, and we got to get
end.
Yeah, dead-end flushing to get it up and out.
Debit flushing.
Oh, dead-end flushing.
Okay.
Yeah. But everything's going as good as it possibly could be.
Sounds like you've been real busy.
We have been.
Yeah.
It's been good.
Good.
It's been good.
All right. Any?
I have a question. The hydrant over by Povey, is that where the trucks back up, and could we put bollards there?
Correct. And the bollards stand about 5 feet tall, and there's about 4 of them. They're 4 foot in diameter and filled in concrete.
So they are already there, and they still took the hydrant out?
Oh, they took out 3 bollards, a hydrant, and down below the infrastructure. The good thing is we had that main off for the drainage project.
What hit it?
An 18-wheeler.
He really hit it.
And then some, yes.
Yeah.
I've never seen that before. Wow. There's parts of his trailer left at the site.
Did we find out who he was or?
Yes, we do have his information, trucking company, and that's the second claim that we're pursuing right now.
Okay, thank you.
Very good. Any other questions?
So I just wanted to sort of emphasize in the well 4 situation, because at the last board meeting, the idea is that the well casing had been scrubbed, and so we're going to have the video go down in order to make sure that it was in good shape in order to reinstall all the equipment.
Mm-hmm.
But as Tony indicated, there's a lot of sand in the bottom of the well, which means that the sand is coming through and it's filling up the well. And the question as to whether or not it is going to be useful in the future is really yet to be determined. So Tony's working on getting the proposals, just pumping out what they were talking about, maybe pumping out 50 feet of sand?
50 feet of debris, and that's about 2 yards worth of dirt.
Yeah.
You're looking at about 14,000, but I'm trying to find out if you do pump it down and the casing is salvageable with the relining, what's the gallons per minute we're going to lose? If it's not salvageable and we got to abandon the well, what's the options for well 6? There's a few different scenarios, because that's part of our blending program.
And so we were hoping that if the video inspection had good results, then we would be in front of your board in order to recommend the purchase of the equipment and the installation of the equipment. But at this point in time, it's going to be down for a while as we start looking at our options.
Okay.
But well 8 is up and running, doing great. No issues.
The lift station that clogged, is that the one on Pier Avenue?
Yes, it is. That's the only lift station we have. Yes.
Okay, I thought so. But
yes.
What was it clogged with?
The rags, Swiffer rags, debris like that, that the impeller that's inside the volute has a hard time chewing it up.
Mm-hmm.
It's designed to do that, but some of the new products are really tough. They don't fall apart as easy because it was built, in 1963.
People put the Swiffer things down.
You'd be surprised, yes.
Oh,
And diapers?
If they can get it down the toilet or I really don't know how they do it, but it gets down in there. We found sunglasses to Hot Wheels, but...
Out at CMC in the past, they actually had entire blankets that would go down.
To just do it
just beat them down.
Maybe that's some educational outreach we could do to tell people not to throw those sorts of things down the toilet.
I get so mad at the stores because you see all the flushable, and they're not. You know, I wish they would do something about that packaging. So,
will the changes in stuff coming up with the styrofoam have any impact on that? Probably not.
No, we've never had issues with styrofoam.
No, but I mean the changes in the laws with not being able to use styrofoam. Will some of those products also go off the market? Is what I was wondering.
Oh, probably nothing you're seeing, right?
Nothing that we're seeing.
Yeah.
Yes. I would say no.
Okay.
All right. Thank you.
Chief Lieberman is not here. So, Mr. Ogren, do you have a report?
Yeah. President Austin, members of the board, a few items. First, of course, Mr. Clemens is in the audience again tonight and will be here as an employee at your board's next meeting. He's been here on a number of days, just on his vacation time, and so we've come up with a list of some of the transitional issues that we're going to be looking at. I'm going to run through them real quick. Prop 218 and rates, USDA and State Water Board applications for water system funding, our overall water resource strategies, capital projects, what are the authorities of the general manager here, budgets, actually will primarily be Carrie and Will. What's the status of our grants and where are we at in the administration of the grants? What's the upcoming public outreach, fire tax, low impact development, and other items? Muni code is the product that we're using in order to codify the rules and regulations, and that's at near completion. And Nicole's been taking the lead on that project. We're going to develop a summary bullets of the roles of each staff member. Of course, we have the one of the thoughts is that we've had some individuals come in from the mobile home parks wanting to know how much the tax, if passed, would affect them. So we're going to do some analysis on each of the mobile home parks. I haven't talked to Tony yet, but he and the crews get to come up with a list of what some of their operational concerns are for Will, and then the election process for next year. So that's sort of a quick list of the brainstorming of what we have targeted to make sure to cover during our transitional time.
It's plenty.
Yeah, there's plenty. We met with South County Sanitary Services, Inc. this earlier in the week. A number of topics covered, options for rate reductions, and options for large item pickup, because so far the board has funded large item pickups in fall. That item we anticipate having on the agenda for next meeting. The concept, one of the options that there's going to be a few, is essentially to allow individual residences. It's a residential program, not a business program. Rather than having a fall and a spring cleanup, simply allow people to call two times a year at their convenience. Right now, the board funds five large item pickups, so maybe the idea is three large item pickups each time, so that would make it up to six. So we'll be providing your board with some options at the next meeting, and with the goal that maybe we'll have a new innovative program for the first time in our area. I can't remember if they mentioned that San Miguel Garbage might be doing something similar. They asked us about having a payment lockbox in the office because we do have people come through who are paying their water bill and want to pay the garbage bill at the same time. They gave us an update on the recycle commodity market, which I think, as everybody knows, has not been good and it's not getting any better. And then, Carrie, they also mentioned an app. Were you going to talk about that?
They have a new app, and it's on their website. It's called Recycle Right Slo County. And you're able to pay your bill on there. It'll give you type in your address, and it'll let you know what days is your pickup. And then there's also a thing called the Waste Wizard, where you can type in the item you're looking to recycle, and it'll tell you either to put it in the trash or put it in the recycling bin. So
what was the first recycle?
Recycle Right, SLO County. And if you go to
Recycle Right, SLO County.
Yeah. And if you go to South County Sanitary Services website, they have a link there. And
okay.
Yeah, it's pretty helpful.
So we should try to get that link on our website.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Following up then, I've also scheduled a meeting with County Administrative Officer Wade Horton for next week in order to talk about the LAFCO application for divestiture. The district filed yes on Measure A20. There were no arguments filed in opposition to Measure A20. Therefore, no rebuttals to an argument against are necessary. And essentially, the work that we need to do as a district in coordinating with the county clerk's office has now been complete. Tony gave an update on the timing for the pour for the generator project. I did talk to the county. They plan on April is the repaving of North Swing and Pershing, and where they're going to start doing their repaving projects in Oceano. And so we're going to get the North Swing project out to bid. I've been waiting to try to time it because ideally we finish up our water line replacement project as the road repaving crews are coming in. It never works out that perfect. And the hope is to minimize some of our costs associated with repaving if the county's going to go in there and do repaving themselves. And then lastly, we've been following up and providing, basically submitted all of our final information for the IRWM grant application that we're supported on the regional basis, and it's part of the consent agenda, the formal resolution. But we had a lot of information that we needed to submit as part of that grant application. And then the formal resolution on the agenda item will complete our efforts necessary to pursue those grants. And I'd be glad to answer any questions. Oh, I do have a couple more things. Sorry. Save the date. So next Monday, the 18th, is the APCD hearing on the dunes. And so for members who are interested in that, where is that going to be at?
Okay. South County. It's at the Regional Center.
South County Regional
South
Center.
South County Regional Center. Yeah. So that's on Monday. And then and two items in December, the California Department of Parks and Recreation is going to be hearing some, providing some presentations on their status of the Public Works Plan for the state vehicle recreational area. And the first meeting is going to be on December 10th, Tuesday, at 5:30 at the South County Regional Center. And then meeting number two will actually be in Bakersfield, and that's on Wednesday, December 11th at 5:30. So the critical date there is December 10th, Tuesday, December 10th, 5:30 at the South County Regional Center. And that concludes my statements. Be glad to answer any questions.
Any questions for?
Yeah, I have a few questions. What's the status of the Facebook page?
We are getting closer. We just haven't been able to do the announcements. And so
do you have a ETA on that?
Yesterday. So we want to try to get it out. And the point is we want to get it out before Will starts, because part of it we want to announce his start and everything. So I might have to reduce my expectations on what I actually want to do to get it out, and kind of I was hoping to do broader things, but given different timing challenges, we might just have to start it up and get it out there and not be as not include all the things that I'd hope to do.
And what's the status of my request to get the raw data from Godby, from the survey?
I don't know if you have any help on that, but we right now the response. So one of the things here is that I am not aware of the actual type of information that they have. And they have basically told us that they have provided us the information that's public information.
Well, they just provided the report, right?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So without the raw data, nobody could do an independent assessment if they wanted to. And I was also looking for the scripts in English and Spanish to see exactly what the questions were and, you know, what contact attempts they made and when they were successful and not.
Yeah, so it's a kind of a challenging situation simply because in public records requests, when we don't know what they're actually possessing and they're saying they've given us what is due to us.
Does the contract have specific language about what they're going to deliver?
Yes, and we can route that by you. We can send that to you.
Okay. Because yeah. I'm just a little skeptical. If they don't want to reveal their raw data, it kind of, it's a lack of transparency.
Yeah, and the feedback that we've gotten is that they've provided us with what standard, and so, but we'll route the, you know, we'll send the contract over.
Okay, thanks. And then I just had one request. I checked my mailbox, and there's an invitation in here from the Off-Highway Motor Vehicle Recreation Commission to take a tour that was last Friday, which I would have liked to have gone on. So if somebody could let me know when I have mail in my box, I would appreciate it, and I could stop by.
Yeah, in fact, that's something we should probably do for all board members, is that just send a quick email. Because the other option, you know, we don't like opening people's mail, but on the other hand, if you want us to, we can scan it in and send it to you as well.
I'm close. I can just swing by.
Okay.
Just need to know that there's something here. Thank you.
You can open my mail if I get something.
Meeting.
I don't care.
It's in my box.
Seriously.
It's in the last board meeting.
It's dated.
Maybe
okay.
I'm wrong. I was in here.
Is there anybody else have any questions for Paul?
I can't make sense of checks.
No. Okay, so we'll move on to.
I'm wrong.
Manuel, he's not here, so we'll do our board of directors and outside committee reports. Director Villa, do you have it? Mm-hmm. Director Gibson?
Nothing to report.
Vice President White?
Nothing to report. Fire meeting on Friday.
Nothing either.
No. I have nothing. The sanitation district met, and our meetings are now at DeGrover Beach City Hall, and we just approved the construction management agreement for the redundancy projects. That was about it on our agenda. Okay. Any, are there any public comment on the board of directors and outside committee reports? None. Goes to consent agenda. So we have the minutes of October 23rd, cash disbursements, approval to write off the uncollectible utility charges, the district's fiscal year quarter one treasurer report, and we adopt a resolution designating the general manager as the authorized representative to file an application, execute agreements for the 2019 Proposition 1 Integrated Regional Water Management Information Grant Program. So are there any of those items that anyone wants to take off the consent agenda?
I don't need to pull it, but I just had a question about 8C.
Okay.
Do we always publish in the Trib, and is there a, is it cheaper to publish in the New Times, or?
Yeah, we normally do it with the Tribune, but we've never done it in the New Times.
I know the law's like lagging behind modern technology. It doesn't seem like a very effective way to notify people, but so I think we could go with something cheaper. But.
Yeah, there's some general rules in there about talking about a newspaper of general circulation.
Mm-hmm. And so does it have to be a subscription?
So I'm not sure. You know, this one's already pretty much preset, but we can certainly look into whether or not the New Times would qualify for those statutory purposes.
Okay, thanks.
Okay. So is there any public comment on any of these items on the consent agenda? Okay, seeing none.
Entertain a motion.
I make a motion. We approve the consent agenda as amended.
Second.
Can we get a roll call, please, Carrie?
Vice President White?
Yes.
Director Gibson?
Yes.
Director Villa?
Yes.
Director Oplogle?
Yes.
President Austin?
Yes. Okay, that brings us to business items. Item 9A, review the district's budget status as of September 30th, 2019. I believe Carrie has a report. Presentation for us. Yeah.
President Austin, members of the board, we have your first quarter budget review for you. I just have a summary of each fund on here, but it's also in your packet. So, for the admin fund, I was just going to go fund by fund, and you guys can stop me, or if you have a line item you'd like to draw out, you can stop me whenever. So, for the admin fund, the property taxes are estimated based on the county's October report from the county assessor's office. The actual property taxes are scheduled to come in December and then again in April, and that's based on the county's collection system, and that's how it comes through to us each year. For expenditures, we have savings in personnel costs in the admin budget. Most of that is in salaries and wages, the PERS contribution, and things like health insurance with employees. This is because the budget we had finally or had approved for the final budget, there was more overlap scheduled for the transition of the general managers, and the current general manager was being budgeted at a full-time position instead of part-time. The savings in the admin fund is then spread through each other fund through the admin allocations, so a lot of these funds have a savings because of this admin budget savings. So you'll see that throughout the funds, and the first one you'll see it in, I'm hoping this reaches, is in the fire fund, and that's most of that savings is all from the admin savings. Fire fund is right where we expect it, and we don't really anticipate anything fire related to see a savings, except for maybe the admin allocation. Then for the lighting fund, most of our savings in the lighting fund is from our street lighting. This is because we had some LED lights replaced with the energy watch team a while ago, but we continue to see savings. I'm not sure. I didn't do a seasonal analysis, but I have a feeling with the time change, it'll probably increase. But I've actually never done the seasonal analysis, and that's probably something we could do soon. So then for the next fund, our facilities fund and the general fund. So the revenue shortfall that you see, it's very small, but it's based off the utility reimbursements we get from our tenants down at the fire station. We rent out to a tenant in our lease agreement. We pay the utility bills, and then they reimburse us. So whatever shortfall is in revenues is also going to be in the utilities that we pay for that tenant. So they're directly related. And the savings in the facilities fund is mostly based off the admin allocation. There's a little bit savings right now in maintenance and structures, but we just bought that oven for the fire department, and I don't want to bank on that being savings. So then for the water fund. So the water fund in the revenues look high, but that's for the first quarter because two of our six billing cycles have gone out. We did include a revenue comparison on page 23 of your packet, and that shows more of a seasonal, what we would expect versus our target versus what we got in the first quarter. This spreadsheet we've been putting together since 2015 when the rates first increased. This shows that we're still a little low. It looks like we're 26,000 lower than what we would expect, seeing that the last two cycles were summer cycles or summer seasons. So you would expect those to be higher than the ones that are coming up. And so for revenues, we still expect what we've budgeted to be right, but they are a little bit lower. So, but that analysis on page 123 helps show the seasonal adjustment. Then for expenditures, we have saving in personnel. We had adopted a contingency for the new positions, the lead in the manager, and that seems to be covering our water budget just fine. And the majority of our savings in the water fund is really coming from our utilities. Since well 8 was down, we weren't pumping, so the low pumping costs are shown in the expenditures as huge savings. So that was where the majority came from. And then we also got confirmation from today. It's not reflected in your budget sheets today, but we talked to the county about what we budgeted for state water, and we're most likely to come under budget with state water based on what DWR will be charging for the year 2020. So that's good news, seeing as last year it was the opposite of that. So then in the staff letter, we also call out expenses in the water fund that seem to be coming in high at the first quarter, but we are expecting them to level out. One of those was the water meter budget, and they've been replacing old meters and getting those taken care of in the first quarter. Then also maintenance on structures and fixed assets were high. That's due to the well 4 and 8, the emergency actions related to that. We had to repair the motor, and then we also camered well 4, and so all those costs were incurred during the first quarter. We also had some costs related to Highway 1 drainage project by the county. They required the district to isolate the water line, one of them, feeding the businesses on Highway 1 during construction. So those costs should level out since we've gotten that project's getting closer. And other two items that I didn't call out in the staff letter, but they look high, and they are high compared to what we had budgeted, is claims and settlements. That's from all the hydrants and things like that that we incur in expenses on, but then we later will collect on them. So whatever you see in the expense, you'll later see in revenues. And the same thing goes for pass-through. That's our wheeling charges. So it looks high because it's at 33%, but they'll be collected on bills. So that's why the 2 out of 6 billing cycles it reflects that difference. So then, wastewater fund. So the revenues are similar to the water fund with the 2 billing cycles and happening, and we have 6 total. So that happened in the first quarter. So they look high, but expected to be what we budgeted. Personnel in the sewer fund, it looks like a huge savings, but that's because the crew, they just started doing their jetting in the second quarter. So there's no salary really. You'll see it in the next budget review, the jetting cost and their sewer cleaning. That'll come next time. And then same with supplies and services, that reflects that, and they also have a administrative allocation savings there too, which is true of all funds. And then garbage fund is tracking, the franchise fees are tracking as we expected, and then the savings is based on personnel costs and the admin allocation. Then for the equipment fund, this is funded through the 3 enterprise funds, so the water, the wastewater, and the garbage. So whatever it costs for maintenance and fuel, it'll be funded through a transfer through the 3 funds on a percentage basis. And maintenance looks high in the equipment fund, but we had to replace a hinge hatch on the jetter. But that'll be covered by the savings that's seen in the 3 enterprise funds. So and we don't expect much more, hopefully, with anything like that with the jetter. So those are all the funds. And if anyone had a particular line item or questions, I'd be happy to help. Or if Pablo has anything? No?
Does anyone have questions?
No.
Sounds good. Is there any public comment on the budget review? Status? Seeing none. Okay. So this is a risk to receive and file. Okay, thank you very much, Jenny. So we will move on to the review of the painting proposals for the old fire station. Consider providing direction to the general manager to approve the proposal deemed preferable by the board. So did you want to talk about
Yes, President Austin, members of the board. I really want to really quickly turn it over to the ad hoc committee, which consisted of Director Gibson and President Austin. But my preliminary comments are staff's been working with the ad hoc committee about the different painting options. Nicole Miller really has been the one who's been leading the work and has was able to obtain proposals from a number of different painting companies. If your board wants to proceed with the efforts to do, you know, the painting of the building, then my recommendation would be to authorize the president to execute a purchase order for the lowest bid that we've received, lowest cost proposal received, subject to confirmation of that they're going to do lead removal, pay prevailing wage, because what we've done is Nicole has communicated, has provided them all with the lead testing results, and it's our understanding that all of the proposals are based on lead, but we haven't gotten that positive confirmation back from all of the proposals. One of them where she sought to confirm that the price includes the lead removal, she did not get an she never got a negative or an affirmative response. It was more like a recognition that the question was there. So the idea is, you know, we still would want to work with the lowest cost that is covers the lead removal and is subject to prevailing wages. And if your board wishes to proceed with action today, then we'll do those confirmations, and whoever is truly the lowest bid and meets all of the requirements, then the president would be authorized to execute a purchase order. But I kind of want to turn it over to the ad hoc committee and the discussions about whether we want to pursue with all the base painting right now.
Okay, well, I think that's what we want to do. We have the three bids, but like you said, they don't all say, only one says that mentions lead removal. So we have to, I think, confirm the lowest bid with the prevailing wage, lead removal included, and get find out just what they are, because they're quite different in price. So I would like to get the board to say if we would like to go ahead and authorize the staff to find out all that information and then go ahead and authorize to go ahead and pick the one that meets all the qualifications that we're looking for. So
I have a question. What is have we determined what that old fire station is going to be used for? I mean, it's been kicked around for this and that and the other thing. Do we ever develop a plan so we're just painting it so it looks better and then put a mural on it?
Is painting it to clean it up and get the mural. And then I don't think we've gotten as far as what we're going to do with it, right?
That's correct. There's been no board really discussion about the options or the determination. The idea of painting it was to get it prepped for the mural. What staff is doing right now is that the main bay where there's the two antique fire trucks in there, but it's also been historically used for archiving and storage. And so Carrie's been working with Nora and consistent with the board's adopted public records retention and destruction policy to go through and make sure that everything that needs to be maintained is being maintained, and to have the rest of the records that can be destroyed, get them destroyed. So there's a big cleanup effort. There's a second, so that's the main bay. There's a second area where all of our archived, what is permanently archived, will move into, and that's there's sufficient room in that side room to do that. Of course, the third area is what we rent out. But the idea right now is we want to get that major bay cleaned up so that whatever the future use is, that it's ready to, you know, some sort of action. If any of the board members are interested in viewing it, we can do that at any time. The stairs going up to the second floor are not in a condition. They have to be repaired. The bathroom that's upstairs has got to be repaired. So there's some internal work that would have to be done on it before it can be really used for anything other than what we're using it for right now, which is
storage. Is all the storage of the records upstairs?
No, it's all downstairs. Yeah, we don't do anything upstairs.
Nothing's upstairs.
There was like a exercise equipment upstairs, a Bowflex or something, and yeah. But there's nothing upstairs that's being used, and we basically don't go upstairs right now. It's not a safe condition to really go up.
Okay.
So that's the status of our efforts, and it's really ongoing. We've sort of set a goal of, you know, the end of the year to try to, you know, get the archive boxes into the other room and be able to...
When did these paint... They were all after the first of the year, right? Everyone would start after the first? Is that...
I can't remember which one, but one of them simply won't... You know, some of the pricing is to give them flexibility on when they schedule it.
Or December, because they said that's usually slow and they can give their workers work.
The general feedback that we've gotten is it's slow during the rainy season, which is basically... You know, January, February, March.
Okay, so that's the way I feel that we should...
What if we took the lowest bid contingent that they had, that included prevailing wage and the lead issue?
That's the recommendation. The low bid contingent on prevailing wage and lead removal. I should also mention that there's not a lot of lead. Of all the areas tested, the primary area is like the paint on the wood sills around the windows and around the doors. They still have to take care in making sure to remove that lead properly. But it's not the entire building.
Okay, that's good.
That's for sure.
What color are we going to paint it?
Yeah.
What color?
Well, I think we had talked about it being a light sand color, I think, right? Something that you could paint over with the mural. Yeah.
Some people want it red.
Red?
Bright red?
I guess we'll get to pick the color after we...
Well, red fades too quickly. I wouldn't recommend red.
What?
No, I was just... It's just a question of curiosity as much, and everybody else is going to want to know the same thing.
Right.
So we have to come back, and if your board wants us to proceed with a proposal, we will have to come back in December with the actual budget adjustment out of contingencies. And whoever is the low bid, we can bring in paint samples and see what your board... That would be kind of a fun meeting. I always think that when people are looking at paint samples, it usually gets a little bit lively and, you know, robust. And
okay, so do we have a consensus that that's what we want to do?
I think Vice President White brought up a good point. Maybe we should also consider the more broader context of what we want to do with that building. I mean, I think it's important to paint it to, you know, because it's normal maintenance, but I'd like to see us have the bigger discussion at some point.
What we're going to do with the building after we paint it, that's what we're going to discuss.
I mean, it's got a couple of antique fire engines in it, right?
Yes.
That sounds cool. I mean, could that bay be open for tours at some point? I don't know. There's lots of things we could talk about.
I wasn't really hoping to do anything real intense at the next meeting because... It's going to be my last meeting.
Well, I don't think it needs to be the next meeting.
Well,
I would like to see the broader discussion at some point.
Yeah, if we come back with paint samples and the budget adjustment at the next meeting and wherever your board obviously wants to go, but we've been thinking about a variety of creative options amongst staff.
I think what we want to do is we wanted to clean up that corner and make that building look nice. So the first step is what our agenda item is review the painting proposals, decide if we're, you know, going to get it painted, and then we go on to what we, because it's got to be painted either way. So.
I'm sure it needs painting to preserve it. I'm sure by looking at it, it needs a good paint job, and whatever we're going to do with it, it still is going to need a good paint job.
Right.
We tear it down.
No,
I'm just saying we don't want to keep going.
Well, there was no. At one point, there was a discussion about developing our maintenance area into that area and using that ground for something else. There was a discussion.
And I'm just, what I was just wondering is if, I can't remember how that discussion ended, but if we're sure we want to save that building, which I would advocate that we do, don't get me wrong, it'll need painting. So whatever we do with it needs a coat of paint.
Yeah, and, you know, my general thoughts are it's very hard to imagine it being torn down in the foreseeable future.
It's almost historic.
Yeah. One of the prior directors had talked about it being a museum, and, you know, I haven't lived in the community or anything else like that, but a higher and better use is something that can be envisioned. The district owns all the property from the corner to the fire station. One of the things that staff we would like to do in the shorter term is to modify the fencing around it, because we have fencing that goes all the way from the sheriff's substation to the actual building, and there's a bunch of open space in there, and we've got the big field behind the fence, so we're talking about modifying the fencing immediately just to open it up and to have...
And clean up the yard around
it. Yeah, and clean up the yard.
Fix that pole and fly a flag.
Right, and then when we think about its use maybe over the next 5 years or something like that, not a 10 or a 20-year use, but what kind of use might it be good for? It still seems to me in the long term, something of a redevelopment of the property is going to really be beneficial. But in the short term, there are really some good options too. Part of it is, you know, what about the antique fire stations? Can we clean it up? Are they operating? Do people want to get in there and help with, you know, community efforts to maintaining it? Could we do other programs with kids that are artsy and try to do some, you know, kids community-oriented programs? We know that there's been business interests that have expressed some interest in leasing the space. So I think there really are a wide range of options for your board to consider. And my thoughts, though, is that the consideration should be something like, well, let's talk about the next 5 years. Because after 5 years, then other options about, you know, doing something bigger and better for the, with the property might be on the table. But it's really hard for me to envision that that particular structure is really going to last, you know, for a long, long time. It just, it's, you know, my own personal opinion is that there's probably some, it's right on Highway 1. It's, a you know, right in the view shed in Highway 1. And as we see, hopefully, commercial properties developing along Highway 1, like the Melodrama has, as the coffee shop has, then our stretch of Highway 1 where the governmental facilities are at would be equally nice to be able to fix up. But again, envisioning when the funding might come around, we don't see it in the short term.
Okay, so back to our item.
Let's paint it.
Direct the general manager to, or the office staff to review all the in, what, the three things. So I think if that's a consensus of everyone, then that's what. Do we need
public
to vote
comment?
On it? Is there any public comment on this item?
So, yes, a formal vote is necessary because the purchasing policies right now limit the general manager to $7,500. Since this is more than $7,500, the simple action is to authorize the general manager to issue a purchase order for the low bid with the subject to lead removal and prevailing wage requirements.
So moved.
Second.
Okay, may we have a roll call, please?
Director Gibson?
Yes.
Vice President White?
Yes.
Director Villa?
Yes.
Director Fogel?
Yes.
President Austin?
Yes. Okay. Thank you. Now that brings us to the recommendation, consider the recommendation to the State Water Subcontractors Advisory Committee supporting the participation in preliminary efforts of the State Water Delta Conveyance Project.
And it will just take me a second to get the PowerPoint up. And I'm not going to start with the PowerPoint, but I will get there relatively quickly. So a couple items just to outline the discussion tonight. One of the questions that I received after board members reviewed is, well, what's the decision that the billard is really considering tonight? And it's not a formal decision of your board. Really what it is it's providing Director Gibson with direction on how to vote at the State Water Subcontractors Advisory Committee. And you can be yes, you can be no, you can be neutral. The second thing I want to just briefly touch on is some of the upcoming studies that are being pursued by the county and why. But those studies are relatively, you know, normal course of business for the county to do on these kind of projects. And at the advisory committee level, the advisory committee did already support proceeding with the studies. And that's kind of important because it's on this point, too, this other point where the PowerPoint is, of what are the various agencies' positions on the Delta conveyance project that is being proposed by the Department of Water Resources. It's been on the table for many years. It's actually been on the table since 1962 in different forms. It is part of the original project description. So what is this Delta conveyance project that's being discussed, and why is everybody talking about it right now? So again, on the decisions for your board to consider, it's the direction that you might want to provide to Director Gibson. It's November 20th, which is the next State Water Subcontractors Advisory Committee meeting. And, you know, we're always normally used to talking about the Zone 3 Advisory Committee, which is the Lopez system. And that's because historically that's been a lot more active. There's a water treatment plant. It's part of county operations. The state water contract isn't really operated by the county. It's operated by the Department of Water Resources and the Central Coast Water Authority. So from a county perspective, there's very little operational issues. And so the State Water Advisory Committee, it meets, but there's usually not much substance in terms of the advisory committees, especially in comparison to the Lopez system. But at the advisory committee meeting, there was a number of delegates who wanted to bring it back to their governing boards or city councils to get feedback on this. The two who have already acted are Pismo Beach and Morro Bay. Morro Bay is the largest contractor for state water. Pismo is number two. Oceano is number three. Combined, the three communities, call them the big three, account for 67% of all the state water deliveries in the county. The county of San Luis Obispo and CMC also get some water, about 425 acre feet. So both of them are notably less than even Oceano. But then when you take those five together, that's almost the entire project. And then there's some other really small entities. So a few of them wanted to bring it back to their agencies to get some feedback. And Pismo Beach and Morro Bay have acted in support of the item. So studies and upcoming and why, there's really two different studies that the county is going to be pursuing with the Central Coast Water Authority. And as a reminder, CCWA is the entity in Santa Barbara County that operates the state water project on behalf of Santa Barbara County interests. The County of Santa Barbara, the Flood Control and Water Conservation District, is the actual state water contractor. But in the early 1990s, when Santa Barbara County was making their decisions, the county didn't really want to be part of the implementation of the state water project. And so all the agencies who wanted water from the project, the county said, fine, you can, you know, do whatever you want, but form a joint powers authority to manage it and operate it, and, you know, we just don't want to really be part of it. In contrast, our county, the Board of Supervisors, maintained a direct relationship. So the County Flood Control District, San Luis Obispo, and CCWA, since the early 1990s, have been coordinated on a lot of different efforts. And with the changes that are impending on the State Water Project, they've identified two major study areas. One study area is to evaluate what are state water storage options that exist south of the Delta. And so they're going to be looking at a number of different options, and we don't have any real foreshadowing of what they might be. But the idea is the big state water storage reservoir is San Luis Reservoir. It's real near Santa Anela on Highway 5. It stores both state water as well as CVP or Central Valley Project water, which is the big federal project that was developed during the Depression. The federal project is much larger than the state water project, but the federal project also has a number of reservoirs on the east side of San Joaquin Valley. So state water, everything comes through the delta as it heads south, but the federal project has a lot of reservoirs on the east side of Fresno and Millerton Lake and a bunch of the others. So even though the federal project is larger, quantity-wise, state water pushes more water through the delta than the CVP project does. But this coordination of efforts then, one is, with the changes that are being envisioned on the state water project, improvements in reliability, it means that San Luis Reservoir will not be, its benefits as a storage reservoir is going to be reduced. Because if they can get more flows through this Delta Conveyance Project, and I'll get into that a little bit more, more water that flows through there, the more that's going to come south of the Delta, the more often that San Luis Reservoir is going to spill, and so whatever has been used for storage is going to be lost. So both agencies want to say, okay, if San Luis Reservoir is less optimal now for storage possibilities, what are the other options that we have? And so they're going to start doing that study. The second area of studies that they want to do is something that I know that my work on the State Water Project has been, I've been a proponent for a long time, and that is to provide the state water contractors with greater flexibility to do exchanges and to move water around, and essentially to be able to sell it on a short-term basis between each other, because there's agencies who have better water supplies, and then there's agencies that have greater needs in drought. And historically, the State Water Project has been very constrictive on the ability to transfer water between agencies. And so this pressure has been, you know, building up over decades that the Department of Water Resources and the contracts need to be modified in order to give more flexibility on transfers between agencies. And it just simply follows this sort of rule of the more that there are barriers to a transaction, the less likely they're going to happen. And so there's a lot of contractual barriers in the existing state water contracts, and they don't promote use of exchanges between agencies so that those who have additional supplies can help out those who don't. My reading of what's called the agreement in principle, I don't really think that the flexibility goes as far as it should go, but you know, our county itself is like 0.5% of the entire project. Los Angeles is 50%, Kern County is 25%, and the other 27 contractors make up the other 25%. So historically, it is one of those things where we have you know, basically no political influence on these decisions, and so we just kind of have to see how they're evolving. Los Angeles and Kern County are kind of the big dogs in it and everything. So I like the idea that there's more flexibility on transfers and exchanges. I think that works well with Oceano since we have a good supply, and it will open up some opportunities to make a little bit of money off of it in the future. Hard to predict when and how much. Again, I think it's a good movement in the right direction, even though I personally think that they should try to even be more flexible. And so those are the two major areas of study again. One is, what are the better storage options south of the Delta? And two is, with these new changes in the contracts, how might they actually work, and to what degree might our agencies in San Luis Obispo County as well as in Santa Barbara County coordinate to make best use of those flexibilities? And it could even be as simple as our county is in a better reliability position than Santa Barbara County. And perhaps we're helping them out in bad years and making a couple dollars off it in the meanwhile. So I want to pause real quickly there because I want to provide the board opportunity for any questions up to this point in time.
Did you say the meeting with Shirley would be going to November 20th?
Yes.
So we're supposed to give her direction on?
Yes, and the direction would be now on this part two, which is the Delta Conveyance Project.
Okay.
Because the studies the advisory committee already supported, and, you know, again, it's a pretty routine support, but I wanted to make sure to do a little bit of a preview on some of the things that are getting that will be getting studied on the State Water Project.
So this is this is something that we just need to support.
Yeah, so now the issue of the direction on the Delta Conveyance Project is what I'm going to cover now.
Okay.
And this presentation was prepared by the county. Is the presentation that was provided to Pismo Beach, I think it was last week. So, you know, what are the problems in the Delta? And, you know, simply said, it was a project that was constructed in the 1960s and did not address the environmental issues that we're addressing today. So the Department of Water Resources and the State Water Project contractors are in contract amendment negotiations, as I mentioned, more flexibility on exchanges. The other thing that has to happen is that the current contracts expire in 2035. Now, everybody gets to keep their water under what's called development water rights, but the question is, what are the terms of renegotiation? And the critical thing right now is to build, a big component of the project, this Delta Conveyance Pipeline project. If it was constructed today and it had to be paid off by 2035, then that's only 15 years to pay it off. So there has to be a contract extension to give a longer period of time to pay it off. Otherwise, the annual cost will go up. And they're targeting a 40-year bond on the project. A lot of times we see 30-year bonds. I think in the staff report, I might have provided a general reference, but then followed up and found out that they were, or in the details of what we got from CCWA, it indicates that it's a 40-year. Because they have to do the contract amendment for the term, then that's also what's pushing contract amendments for water management tools and more flexibility on exchanges. So there are some cost estimates that I'll be covering and some reliability benefits. And then the participation decision is staff said by the district, because that's the Flood Control and Water Conservation District. It's the same board as the Board of Supervisors by statute. So it's really the county. And then a subcontractor is Oceano, Morro Bay, Pismo Beach, and the rest of them. But the decision really sits with the County Board of Supervisors. Everything from your board's action for Director Gibson to the advisory committee is all advisory, and it's the Board of Supervisors that ultimately holds the decision. And the county right now has about 15,000, it's about 60% of the water that they've contracted for with DWR is still paid for by county taxpayers. So the county still controls 60% of the water, and it is always interesting, and you don't learn it until it happens, how much weight is the county going to give on the recommendations of the agencies, of the subcontractors, versus how much is their decision going to be based on, what the county thinks of themselves. So that we will find out on the day that's in front of them. So this is an illustration of the Delta itself, the point here is that the changes that we're seeing, and there's some graphs that show the reductions in deliveries over time, is really about the biological opinions up in the Delta, because north of the Delta in the Sacramento area is where our source of supply comes from. And it comes down the American, a number of river system, American River, and then it has to flow through the Delta because the state water pumps here are south of the Delta. And so that's created a number of biological problems, and those are being addressed. And the whole topic has gone through different names, the California Water Fix, the Delta Habit, DHCCP. It's been subject to federal discussions. Feinstein was one who has been involved at the federal level. Federal resource agencies are involved. But it's a very complicated situation. So just talks about some of the old and different rivers that in the Delta itself isn't just a delta anymore because of all the levees and the agricultural operations. And within there, there's actually gates so that they can try to control the flows throughout the levee system, which they had not historically done until the most recent drought. The result of being more environmentally responsible, which is my term, because up on at the top of this slide again, create it says a regulatory approach has reduced State Water Project CVP against the Central Valley Project flexibility. I personally would characterize that a little bit differently. I would characterize it as the environmental stewardess, you know, because we have to be good environmental stewards, whether we always agree with them or not. The point is the federal resource agencies and the state resource agencies, it's important that we're taking care of this stuff. And so managing the project in an environmentally responsible way means that the pumping that is appropriate is now different than what people used to believe. And so this is just a general illustration that shows that, you know, in July, August, September, apparently those are months where there's really not pumping restrictions. But it shows when the observations and restrictions in order to help protect the salmon or the delta smelt and the long fin, and I can't quite remember, smelt again. So this is part of the historical biological studies on making sure that we take better care of the delta and then affects when can it be pumped. As a result, in taking greater care of our environmental needs, it means that the actual production of water that can get shipped south of the delta has been decreasing. This particular chart shows like average in the 1980s, which is around 8 million acre feet per year. State Water Project is roughly 4 million acre feet per year, so the difference is going to be the Central Valley Project. That continued pretty close until 1991, and then we see in 1992 and 94, and in subsequent years, it's really dropped off a little bit. The final bar has a question mark for the future, and yet the staff report and a lot of the work that's been done by the Department of Water Resources actually has numbers associated with it, because in the long term, the prediction is that the project is 48%, I think it was 48, but the high 48, about almost 50% reliable on an average annual basis if nothing else is done. That number goes up to about 67% with the implementation of the Delta Conveyance Project. So the Delta Conveyance Project itself is the idea, the plan, that up near Sacramento then is where intake facilities, a number of intake facilities would be constructed. Those intake facilities in today's design are very well designed in order to prevent fish from getting sucked into the pumps. The new designs have been implemented on a number of different watersheds. There's really no controversy in terms of how to design it in a manner to protect the fish. In the stat, and what we see them using is they use the word without salvage. And I'm not exactly sure why they use the word salvage, but the idea is to without, you know, killing a whole bunch of fish. So the intake facilities would be up and around the Sacramento area, and then this light green checker path shows the general direction of where the pipeline would actually be. And it's the example I always like to use is the channel. And so the channel is the pipeline that goes from France to England. And you can drive from France to England by going underneath the English Channel. And it's basically the same technology. You have this huge machine that basically is boring below ground underneath the earth, underneath the delta, in order to convey this water. And it's not to convey 100% of the flows of the State Water Project. the delta itself would still be used for some of the flows. And I think somebody mentioned that what had been there this time last year, the proposal would be for two different tunnels side by side. Governor Newsom recently gave DWR the direction to go from two tunnels down to one tunnel. There really wasn't any noticeable objection from state water contractors because the second tunnel was going to have primarily be for the Central Valley project, and the CVP contractors, the federal contractors, have chosen not to participate in it. Again, they have a lot of dams, Millerton Dam and some of the others on the east side of the San Joaquin Valley that are some of their primary water delivery systems. I don't know as much about the CVP project, but the inclination is that the federal contractors are most likely not as reliant here as they are on some of their other facilities. But with CVP contractors declining, then the Governor Newsom also then gave direction to DWR to pursue a single tunnel. The size of the tunnel is something like 40 feet in diameter. I can't remember exactly.
Underground?
Yes.
And like, where is that actually in this Stockton? Where would that go?
So here's Sacramento.
In the actual scheme of the land.
Yeah, so Stockton's probably off here somewhere. But almost
so would
straight
south.
To
take property to do that? I mean, it would be a big.
Yeah, there's going to be some eminent domain provisions. The cost of land, you know, and going underneath a tunnel.
How long is this supposed to take?
Oh, the construction? Oh, it's a huge project, yeah. I mean, you're talking.
You're completely under that length through the state.
They don't
like
plan
that.
On drinking any of the water.
Yeah, we won't.
They've the State Water Project contractors and the DWR, the organization to actually implement the project has already been formed, and that's the Delta Conveyance Authority. It was formed last year in early 2018, and the State Water contractors haven't always been confident in the Department of Water Resources, including an implementation of a project this large. And so what DWR and the State Water Project contractors did is they negotiated that a joint powers authority would be used to implement this project. And so LA has seats on that, Kern County has seats on that authority, and the rest of the 27 contractors have some shared seats on that authority. But the Delta Conveyance Authority has already been established, and again, part of the reason why the State Water contractors want to implement it through a joint powers authority is this, the Department of Water Resources is so huge and has so many responsibilities, and a project of this nature has to have, you know, certain specific focused responsibilities. And so they've all come to an agreement already. DWR still has to provide ultimate oversight because it's a state-owned facility, and they have to do all the final design approvals and everything. But the ideas would be implemented by a JPA of the State Water contractors.
Excuse me.
Yes.
Who represents the Central Coast on that? Do you know?
For the Central Coast itself, the current membership of the Delta Conveyance Authority doesn't have somebody from Santa Barbara or San Luis Obispo County on it.
Okay.
Zone 7 of Alameda County is one of the leaders of the smaller participants. They have a really good reputation of water resource reputation, and their prior general manager, who I want to say is Jill Dirks, although I might not have the right name. She was the interim general manager for the Delta Conveyance Authority as they were recruiting the permanent general manager. So Zone 7, it's Alameda County Flood Control and Water Conservation District Zone 7, just like Lopez is our flood control district Zone 3. Again, they tend to be one of the leaders of the smaller agencies.
Okay, thank you.
Is the tunnel supposed to help with a salinity problem?
Yes, and I'll get to that.
Okay.
So the bottom line concept here is it's infrastructure to be implemented in order to reduce the environmental impacts of the project in the Delta and to improve the reliability of deliveries to the state water contractors. And so now we're moving into future benefits, climate change, and salinity risks. This picture everybody likes looking at because what they're actually doing is measuring the snowpack. This is during the drought, so they're up there. And not only is there no snow, but the grass is still green. We know that, many of us believe that we're undergoing climate change. Sea level rise, reduced snowpack. What can we do in order to help with the reliability of the project? This ultimately gets into my biggest concerns about the state water project, because locally we have drought buffer, and that drought buffer is a really cost-effective way to improving the reliability of the project in San Luis Obispo County. Most of the state water contractors aren't in that same position. So reliability of the project is, to me, a lesser concern than catastrophic issues. And so the Delta Conveyance Project, in some ways, is an insurance policy against the catastrophic issues. What we see is that there's a prediction that there's something like, I think it was a 65% risk that we're going to have a 6.5 size earthquake, within the next couple years. Not couple years, a couple decades. And the risks associated with the levee system. The levee system in the Delta was built over 100 years ago. And we know that it wasn't built with, current day seismic engineering standards. Even the levees that were built in the Port of Los Angeles were not built with seismic considerations. A lot of those have gone through seismic remediation work using the same technology that Lopez Dam was used to improve its seismic, but that's not going to happen in the levee system in the Delta. These levees are essentially owned by the farmers. The farmers have, the prediction is there's 20 islands, which are farming islands that would be at significant risks, and I have a farmer friend who's up there, and he says that they'll just simply forever lose their operations if they get hit by the big quake and their levees settle out. They're going to be done. There's nothing he can do about it. They just know that they're at that kind of risk. So DWR has identified something like 50 levee breaks and 20 islands that can be flooded in one of these significant events. And it essentially, a big event like that could reduce the ability or completely eliminate the ability for flows to go through the Delta. And so the conveyance project, the infrastructure itself, is a way to mitigate the risks associated with a major seismic risk. And, we talk a lot about different things that might happen, and earthquakes happen. If it's going to happen, it's a matter of when it's going to happen. And I think that's similar to my farming friend's thoughts, is that, it's not a matter of when they're going to lose their operation, if they're going to lose their operation. It's, they think about it as when they're going to lose their operation. So the levee system and what's developed in the Delta over the last century plus does have a major risk associated with the State Water Project. And the other one, which is equally concerning or maybe even greater concerning, is sea level rises. And what this chart does is it shows as sea level rises the progression of salinity and the different dates that we have, 2015, 2025, 2060, and 2100, this indicates where the salinity lines would get up to 2,000 parts per million. And the emphasis of 2,000 parts per million is that you've basically got water quality now that has to go through a desal plant if you want it to be able to use it. We also know that in the most recent drought, because of reduced flows, a number of state water contractors already could start tasting the salts in the water. Morro Bay, which was almost entirely reliant on state water during the drought, customers indicated they could taste the salts. The water quality had really sort of deteriorated, and the Department of Water Resources was recognizing the challenges with water quality. We're already seeing it now. We're already seeing it in a drought, and with climate change, the impacts of water quality within the Delta, as far as freshwater supplies, are going to just get worse. So the Delta Conveyance Project needs to be seriously looked at for that second event as well. Now, I want to go back a little bit to some of the environmental statements I was making. When we see changes in salinity in a delta like this, that's not necessarily bad for an environment, because saltwater marshes are considered to be very high-quality marshes. This change in salinity that's predicted with sea level rise, the risk is really associated with using the delta as a conveyance facility for drinking water purposes. So on this particular slide, we actually already sort of talked about the agreement and principle. On the management tools, the point here is that at this point in time, the County Board of Supervisors, or in 2020, is going to have to make the decision on whether to opt to participate in the preliminary efforts of the Delta Conveyance Project. That's not an obligation to participate in the actual implementation of the project. However, if the county doesn't participate in the preliminary efforts, then there's no opt-in to the permanent construction. Similar approach was taken by our county in the implementation of the Nacimiento Water Project, that the agencies that chose to participate in the EIR and the preliminary planning efforts are the ones who were able to proceed into the construction, but they weren't required to participate in construction. They were allowed to opt out. It happened to be in the Nacimiento Project. Everybody stayed in, and you know, those who started ended up implementing the project. But the idea is similar here with the Delta Conveyance Project. If some of the agencies choose not to participate, then they won't be participating in the long-term implementation. This chart's a little bit hard to read, but what it does is it says, well, what's the cost to our local agencies to participate in these upfront studies? And as it breaks down to Oceano, it's about $150,000. That's over, that is paid at least over a five-year period. During the meeting of the state water subcontractors, Wade Horton, County CAO, said that the county's clearly got the ability to fund the costs up front and to have the agencies repay it over a five-year period. We work out to about $30,000 a year for Oceano. We also confirmed with the county today that our debt service payments to the Central Coast Water Authority are going to be terminating within that five-year period, and we'll have more savings associated with that termination of because we're not going to be paying for debt service to CCWA anymore. We'll have more savings there that can certainly cover these costs. The estimate for the implementation is that it's around $250 plus or minus per acre foot. In comparison, our current state water bill is about $1,500 an acre foot, and that includes our drought buffer. So we're looking at costs that could go up to $1,800 an acre foot. Let's say you've got inflation by the time this thing really moves forward, you know, even if you're talking about $2,000 an acre foot. When we compare that cost of water to the other alternatives that are available, for example, Central Coast Blue right now is talking about $2,800 an acre foot for water. And the reliability factors differ for the two different supplies. But again, even with these costs associated with the state water project, it's still going to be less expensive than the options to try to do something with state water and move to Central Coast Blue would be more expensive. That option is also difficult to envision, you know, changing from having state water as an important component of our water portfolio and replacing it with Central Coast Blue is really difficult to envision, because Measure D in, I believe, 2010 says that if you're going to sell any of your state water on a permanent basis, you have to get voter approval from Oceano. That Measure D provides some indication to your board of the community's support for the state water project. But again, it's a vital component of our overall water resource strategy today, and it still seems to be, well, not seems to be, it's still less costly than what our other options would be. The next couple slides get into a little bit of looking out into the future. I'm not going to spend much time on them because they're really not germane to today's decisions. But what they talk about is, well, how do we envision the changes in the reliability of the supply? As I mentioned before, the county has an excess allocation. That helps with our reliability, even on top of our drought buffer. This chart says, okay, if we don't do anything, then how do we meet water needs in the future? And it sort of indicates that if the county sells that excess allocation, then our reliability in some years is going to decrease. So what the county says is, well, subcontractors, Oceano, Morro Bay, Pismo Beach, and the rest of them, do you want to buy up the rest of our allocation? They quoted at about $200 an acre feet, but we'd have to buy 3 acre feet for every 1 acre foot we already have. So that would be $600 an acre foot. Kind of a, now we're talking about $2,600 an acre foot in terms of long-term costs. Nothing that's going to be decided on in the foreseeable future. But again, the county is talking about, well, state water subcontractors, are you interested in buying up the rest of the drought buffer water? That's what happened on the Nacimiento project. Originally, the Nacimiento project was 60% subscribed, and all of those who bought into it initially have since bought up the rest of the water. They were able to do that because they refunded the bonds. But this chart then just says, well, what if you participate in the Delta Conveyance Project, but there's no excess allocation? And this one says Delta Conveyance Project with all of the excess allocation as subcontractors. So there's a whole bunch of different reliability analysis dependent on future decisions where, in this example, there's way more than water than what we need in San Luis Obispo County. And in this particular example, it looks a little bit more problematic, or much more problematic. The county policy right now with respect to their excess allocation is that before they would sell it on a permanent basis to others outside the county, they would allow all of the subcontractors the first right of refusal. So again, there's no pending decision for your board on that. But these slides simply illustrate the county is trying to look at the reliability of the project under a number of different scenarios. This slide happens to show some of their cost estimates associated with those different scenarios. But again, I'm glad that they're doing this work because, you know, they need to be doing this analysis, but no pending decisions on this particular material. Summary slides then, the district's, the studies that they're pursuing and which we talked about, and then the recommendations are both in favor of the studies, which is already been recommended, but supporting participation in the preliminary efforts for the Delta Conveyance Project. I think I've covered the points again. Quick summary, I'm more concerned about catastrophic events. I'm concerned about earthquakes impacting the Delta. I'm concerned about how climate change is going to impact water quality, and supportive of this phase of being participants in the preliminary efforts. We know that we're going to have cost savings that are going to help cover these costs, but I hold off on reservation on any recommendations for permanent participation. We need to find out what the results of their analysis are.
Yeah, I just want to say, I guess the county put this presentation together. It's very one-sided, so I did my own independent research. And I would refer you all, if you want more information, to the Sierra Club website. But this approach is not free of its own environmental impacts, and it's very expensive to boot. It would make more sense to me to focus on local solutions, more efficient use, fixing leaks, conservation, stormwater capture, reuse of gray water, recycling. Those are all things that we could do with $150,000 instead of putting it towards this tunnel project.
Okay.
But didn't you mention if we don't do the study, participate, then we can't opt in?
That's correct.
That's what I understand. So.
And we don't make the decision anyway, right? It's up to the county makes the decision.
But right, the Board of Supervisors makes the decision.
Yeah, and I do agree that it's important to consider, to continue to work on local options. But the biggest local option that's in front of us is still Central Coast Blue. The other options are not going to backfill 750 acre feet of water on an annual basis. And so, you know, D-Cell is another one, but its cost projections are even more expensive than Central Coast Blue. And so we do need to continue to work on the various local options. But I think,
with all its flaws, it's still the best option that we have.
I think that's a good way to characterize it.
Well, yeah. I mean, disagree with that. I mean, we can reduce the amount of water that we're using through conservation. We can recharge the groundwater by doing a better job of capturing stormwater runoff before it goes into the ocean. There's other things that we can do that are less technologically complex than this big boondoggle construction project.
Well, I agree with you, Cynthia, that there's a lot more that we can do. But will we meet the supply that's needed? That's
well, we already have more water than we're using, right? By, what, 2.5 times? So.
Well, you also have to factor in the reliability concerns, but I guess that I think what would be appropriate is that you're really looking at parallel paths, that if you want to explore what our additional local options are besides Central Coast Blue, then, you know, your board can commission those studies as the state water study is going forward, and it will then give you a good framework as to decide as to what your recommendation is on ultimate implementation.
I'm just thinking about what you were saying, that we can have all this extra large supply that we can probably sell at a higher price and make money for Oceano. To be honest with you, I'm thinking about that.
Well, and I think that that's an important consideration, because if you're participating in the Delta Conveyance Project, the ability to then do exchanges and other things are going to be enhanced, right? Even if the county looks at selling its excess allocation, by participating in the Delta Conveyance Project, their ability to sell their excess allocation at a higher price is going to be enhanced. So I agree with you that the potential economic values to Oceano improve by participating in the project.
And also the cost to Oceano increase.
I also don't think that it's all these conservation efforts are fine, but I don't think people are going to do it.
That's the whole thing.
I mean,
we would do it. I mean,
well, I do part of it in my own house,
but
I
can't rely on your whole water supply thinking that you're going to get everybody to conserve water. I mean, people just don't.
Well, and the issue is drought.
I mean, it's a lot bigger than just, you know, doing the things that we should be doing, like conserving water. All the things Cynthia mentioned are great, but it isn't. You can't base your.
Well,
you can't conserve
out of
a drought. Oceano
does a good job of conserving water and has reduced its water consumption. And as Carrie had indicated during the budget report, we're seeing shortfalls in revenues because Oceano is continuing to conserve water. But there certainly are limits on conservation.
Okay, so and where like, we're at.
I think we have to look at what benefits the district, so I think we should opt in to keep all our options open.
Well, I also think, you know, we're sitting here now, and we're trying to figure out what's going to happen in 10 years. We better keep our options open. Because if we don't keep our options open, then we really have failed the community. You know, but if we keep the option open, then the people that are here when the time comes, because we might not be here. But if you close the door now, then it's mute. But if you keep the door open, at least somebody else has the opportunity to make a decision in 5 or 6 or 8 years. That is going to be based on what's happening then. And we don't know what the drought's going to do. It's been pretty dry for some years. You don't have to go back very far, just to the 1800s, where it didn't rain for 2.5 years. So, you know, water is not reliable in this area.
It's like when we got state water, everybody was against doing it, and look what happened. It was Oceano was very wise in doing that. It saved us.
Well, in the most recent drought,
we can't just say no to something now. Just what Karen said.
Yeah, in the most recent drought, the single issue that differentiated Oceano from some of our neighboring communities was the fact that we're participating in the state water project.
Yeah. So we're going to direct. Oh, is there any public comment on this item? Seeing none. So we are at the point where this is just a direction to, I think.
Yeah.
Shirley knows what.
But do we need a vote, a director and a vote?
Well, that can reaffirm. As a representative at that advisory committee, Director Gibson is certainly free to vote unless there's specific direction given by the board, in which case she is supposed to follow that direction from the board. So Director Gibson has indicated that she would vote in support of participating in the preliminary efforts. Your board can either confirm that with her direction or simply, you know, let her go or give her alternative direction.
I believe that we're all good on that.
Well, four are good on that. One is not good on that.
Okay, do we vote on this?
I would like consensus
of the majority of the board.
I would like to make a motion that we advise our representative to the State Water Subcontractor Advisory Committee that we are in support of continuing our participation in the State Water Program.
The preliminary efforts for the Delta Conveyance Project.
Thank you.
Is there a second?
Second.
Okay, may we have a roll call, please?
Vice President White?
Yes.
Director Villa?
Yes.
Director Gibson?
Yes.
Director Plogle?
No.
President Austin?
Yes.
Thank you.
Okay, so I think that's the end of all of our business items. So we'll come up next, item 10, hearing items. Do we have anything? Nope. Received written communication?
Just the notification of the meeting for the Public Works Plan, State Parks, on December 10th.
Any late received? Any comments on the future agenda item?
I have a couple. So for the December meeting, we're anticipating the LID presentation. And similar to the IRWM grant, the board will need to consider a resolution in support of the LID project, which also means that we'll be presenting some of the design changes that the consulting team has been working on. Based on the discussion with South County Sanitary Inc., we want to bring back some of the new program options and concepts for large item pickups.
Okay.
And do a preview of a possible rate decrease, because the thought was if your board is supportive of a rate decrease for garbage and solid waste pickup, then action in January would be appropriate at that time. On the former item, large item pickup, the garbage company says simple board motions with a letter saying, you know, this is how we'd like to change the program would be sufficient. With regard to a preview of possible rate decreases in January, they need that to be by formal resolution. It doesn't have a Prop 218 implication because it's a decrease, not an increase. But for purposes of their auditors, they want to make sure it's done by resolution. And, of course, Jeff and I will make sure to look at the franchise agreement to be able to cite the various sections of where this all can happen. And then the budget adjustment for the painting and maybe a little bit of discussion on future options, just to get those discussions rolling.
Color chips?
Color chips.
How many colors of tan can you find?
Any future hearing items we need to...
Not immediately.
Any public comment on anything?
I just wanted to make one announcement. If anybody's interested in finding out what happens to the stuff that you throw in your blue bin, I've arranged for the IWMA to give a presentation at iFixit in SLO on December 9th at 5 p.m.
It's what? Where?
iFixit. It's 1330 Monterey Street in SLO, and it's at 5 p.m. on December 9th. I'd hope to have a tour of the material recovery facility where they do the sorting, but they're not allowing anybody in the building anymore. But this presentation does include video and other information on what happens there. You can't go in. They're planning a visitor center with an overlook, so you'll be able to see into the facility, but you're not allowed inside anymore.
All right. That's very good. Thank you. Anything else? Someone want to move that we adjourn?
I make a motion that we adjourn the meeting.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
We are adjourned.
Sign the check. Sign the check. Sign the check.